It's a little after 9. I apologize. I'd like to call to order a meeting of the Senate Health and Human Services Committee. I appreciate members showing up on relatively short notice. And before we begin, I want to try to just make sure that members from and members of the public understand why we're doing this. This is a little unusual, and I do want to try to explain as best I can. And if I need some help, I'll ask. We've got some members of the Senate staff here that can help answer questions. We have a process, and in your packet of information, you'll find a copy of a statute, Minnesota Statute 3.3005. And members can look at this. It's relatively brief. It's a page and a half. This statute is the process that is in law that prescribes what we do when federal grant dollars are awarded to the state of Minnesota. And because the federal dollars are released at various times in the year, as I understand it, primarily in October and then again in January, at least one of those occasions is typically a time when the legislature is not in session. We are not typically in session in October. And so the process says that when federal grants are released, those grant awards are summarized in a document, and you have a packet of documents. Those are forwarded to the chairman of the finance committees for review, and there is a 20-day window of review, at which time, if no questions are raised about the federal grants, then that money is available to be spent under the terms of the grant by the administration. If questions are raised about the grants on the part of the legislature, and the questions are not resolved in that 20-day window, then the grant dollars are held until the conclusion of the subsequent legislative session, which would mean that the end of the 2012 legislative session. At that time, the grant dollars would be available to be spent unless the legislature passed a law suggesting something else, forbidding the expenditure of those monies, and that law were passed and signed into law by the governor. So the process, as it's written, provides for an opportunity for the legislature to have an opportunity to look at these grants, raise questions, and unless we are able to pass a law forbidding the use of those grants, ultimately they are spent. That is the process defined in law that's called the non-urgent process. There is another part in this statute, subdivision 4, that talks about what happens if the grant dollars are declared to be urgent. And in that case, and the definition of urgent in the law is that the monies have to be spent. The time frame to spend the money is such that they have to be allocated before the legislative session begins. So there isn't an opportunity for the legislature to convene at its normal time and ask questions, but because of the nature of the grants that they have to be expended, have to be allocated before the legislature meets, then there's a process that says they can be declared urgent. And if they're declared urgent, then that window of evaluation on the part of the legislature is 10 days, after which time, if the LAC recommends that the grant monies be spent or not spent, it doesn't matter. At the end of the 10-day period, the administration can spend the money, regardless of whatever advice the legislature may give. Now, I received a packet of information in October. It was a series of grants from the Department of Health and some from the Department of Human Services. The packet that you have today is an abbreviated form of that because some of those grants that we received in October were later not awarded. So the original packet included some grants that turned out to not be awarded to the state. There were a couple of grants that in the conversations I had with Commissioner Ellinger, we elected to just let proceed. And there were some additional, I think, changes in the grants that we saw in October versus the packets that you have today. What's happened is after We asked the questions, had some opportunity to discuss this with the commissioners. The governor instructed MMB to now designate these grants as urgent. So these are the same grants that came to us in October that were non-urgent, and now they're before us as urgent, and that's why we are meeting today. Had they not been declared urgent, we would be having this discussion today as part of our normal business in the legislative session next year. But because of the fact that they were declared urgent, we have a 10-day window to address them, and as I told the commissioners when I met with them, that I think the current process in law is flawed. I don't think any one individual ought to be in a position to say, well, I don't think we ought to spend that money and then decide on my own in the privacy of my office and whatever way I deem appropriate to say, yes, we should spend that money. And I don't think that process is the right one to have. It doesn't provide scrutiny for the people of Minnesota. It doesn't provide an opportunity to scrutinize these grants by the legislature. And I think it is, frankly, an opportunity that individuals oughtn't to have. No one individual ought to be in a position to say, I alone have the power to decide to release some federal money. That, to me, doesn't seem appropriate. So one of the things that we are going to do next session is introduce a bill to amend Statute 3.3005 so that this process will be one that will require a broader opportunity to expose and talk about what the grants are for. I know this is a little bit of kind of inside baseball for people. This is a process that I wasn't intimately familiar with. I want to make sure that people understand this, and I guess I just would like to, for a moment, just to ask if there are questions on the part of members of the committee about this process and how it works or how it has worked or any other questions related to the process of that we are using under 3.3005.
Senator Lurie. Thank you, Senator Hamm. So just you received the packet on October 1st, right?
Think I got it on October 1st. I don't know exactly what date I got the packet of information. It came to me in my office. I'm not in my office every day. I don't recall.
Right. No, I.
But it was in October.
Okay. And you had 20 days to review it, right?
I had until October 20th.
Right. Right. I mean, it was dated September 30th, actually. So during that, you know, whatever period it was through October 20th, any of these questions occur to you before this letter was delivered, literally minutes before the expiration of the 20-day period?
Senator Lurie, the packet of information, as I said, I don't recall the exact date I received it. My recollection was that I received it about a week prior to the deadline. And during the course of that time, I read the documents, talked to a few people in the legislature about this process, trying to understand what we're required to do. And looking at that process, it seemed to me to be appropriate that we ought to have a committee hearing. And that's what I then communicated to the department by letter. And as I told them, and as I told MMB, I don't know if the grants that are being applied for are good or not good, or if they're doing things that are useful or not useful. And I felt that it was not the best process to have me be the only person making that decision. And so what I said is I wanted to have an opportunity to have a hearing. That was my goal. And so because of the fact that these were not urgent in nature, it provided for an opportunity for the legislature in the course of its normal business next year to review these, I felt that that was the appropriate thing to do, is to say, let's hold off and have a hearing. Senator Lurie.
So your concern isn't necessarily with these particular grants. I mean, your initial letter listed every single grant that the Department of Health and that the Department of Human Services had pursued and had expected to be awarded. I understand two of them later weren't and a couple of them changed. But, I mean, so it's not necessarily about these specific grants. We're here talking about the LAC process.
Part of this, Senator Lurie, was that, first of all, I may have an opinion about a particular grant. Whatever my opinion may be, should not be the determining factor, and that was my concern. I may say, well, I don't like this particular grant, so therefore I'm going to hold that and not allow it to go forward. I don't believe that's appropriate for anybody to do that. So rather than do that, I felt that the appropriate thing to do was to have a hearing, which is why I've asked you to be here today. Because of the fact that these came to us and were not urgent, it wasn't apparent to me that there was any need to expedite that process, and we would simply wait until the next legislative session to take this up under the normal course of business. That was my intention. Frankly, I did not know that this was going to be controversial. And I was very surprised. And you have a copy in your packet of the letter that was sent to me from Governor Dayton. And I want to talk about that a little bit in the course of this, too, because, as I said, these were grants that came to us and were not urgent. And there's a process in law that says if things are not urgent, then you dispose of them in the course of, if you have questions, in the course of the legislative process, which I felt was the appropriate way to do this. After I sent the letter off, I had an opportunity to meet with Commissioner Ellinger and parts, some members of his staff, and then also members of Commissioner Jessen's staff. And in the course of that discussion, we talked about these grants. And two things I wanted to find out was if these grants were monies that were going to be used to provide direct care, health care services to anybody in the state of Minnesota. And I was told they were not. These grants were to provide assistance to do administrative functions, and I'm not trying to mischaracterize, but to provide ways to improve different kinds of processes and their costs associated with that. The second thing I asked them is if there were grants that would, if not accepted right now, would put anybody at risk, would cause harm to anybody in the state. And I was told that no, that was not the case. In fact, in the discussion with Commissioner Ellinger, he did raise questions about two grants that he thought might have some concern. And so we said, all right, let's let those go. So after that discussion, it was a great surprise to me to get the letter that you see in your packet from the governor that characterized what we're doing as unwarranted, that this process that we're engaged in is unconscionable or anti-democratic, I believe he called it. I was surprised at the very personal nature of his comments and his letter about me as an individual member of the legislature, that I was doing things that were inappropriate and wrong. And I was also concerned about the characterization of the grants. As he put that in his letter, that they would cause severe harm if we didn't accept them. And the thing that was troubling to me is that in the conversations with the commissioners, none of that came up. These were non-urgent grants. They were not described as being things that would put anybody at risk. And then we get a letter that's very personal, very critical, and characterizing grants in a way that was very different from the discussions that I had with the commissioners. And part of what I want to understand today is if what we heard from the commissioners about these grants is in fact true. Because what my understanding was, and I wasn't the only one in the meeting, I had my staff with me, was very different than the characterization the governor has made. So something isn't right. If the governor's characterizations aren't correct, then I was misinformed. And I would say I was misinformed deliberately, because I gave every opportunity to be informed about the nature of these grants and the potential risk that we might engage in if we didn't approve them immediately. So that's part of what I hope to discover today, is whether or not we were informed correctly about the nature of the grants. And I also want to give the opportunity for members of this committee to understand what these grant dollars are used for. And at the conclusion, we're going to adjourn by, I hope by 10:30, but no later than 11. I am going to invite all of you to communicate with my office and provide any recommendations that you wish about, because I will make a recommendation to the LAC about these grants. And so any information, any comment that you want to make, you can do it in writing or in person, but just to communicate with our office, and then we'll pass that on to the LAC for their consideration when they meet to take up these grants, I assume sometime later in the week. Yes, sir, Lori.
Sir. Okay, just following up, and I'll be brief because we should get on talking about the
yes.
grants. And I do recognize that this is kind of inside baseball, as you characterized it, and it's kind of a process that most of us were not terribly familiar with, myself included. And I'm glad that we're giving it some attention and looking at it, and I'm glad to be here participating. But without the declaration of an urgency, it's my understanding that, you know, you say one person shouldn't be given the power to approve the grants, but, you know, without the declaration of the urgency, there's one person that would delay the grants significantly. And so that's kind of the pushback. And I do hope that we can get away from the high-profile kind of partisan nature of this. I mean, I think we have a new legislature, a new governor. We, you know, swapped parties in control of each, and some of the procedures are going to be used differently. My understanding of the history of the LAC is you've stressed that these were initially submitted without declaring them urgent. That doesn't necessarily mean that they aren't urgent and time sensitive. It's just that's kind of how things were done. I mean, it was the difference between largely between a 20-day time frame and a 10-day time frame. If it's a good grant that meets with the agency's overall goals and directions, you know, this has not been a process that has been highly public and contentious in nature. And so, you know, I think that your characterization of them as non-urgent, you know, maybe they are urgent, but it's just how the process has been used in the past, and that this is elevating it. And hopefully we can just have a good hearing and understand what these are to be put toward and have a good discussion. And then when we get to the legislative session, I think that you're absolutely right. We should take a good look at the LAC statute. It is quite confusing. I've read it several times now and met with council and many folks trying to wrap my arms around it as well, and it probably is deserving of significant attention and review. So
thanks, Lori. Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And to follow up on some of Senator Lori's comments, I will say, Mr. Chairman, this is a procedure that I am totally unfamiliar with. But having taken a real quick look at the statute, 3.3005, I guess my question to you, Mr. Chairman, is that it appears to me that you, as a member of the Legislative Advisory Commission under Subdivision 2A, requested a further review of federal funds, and that as a member of the LAC, you were simply asking questions as to the nature and purpose of these federal grants. And this statute does, in fact, point out the difference between urgent and non-urgent procedures. So my question to you is it appears to me, Mr. Chairman, that you simply followed applicable law as it is written today. And when I read Governor Dayton's letter to you of November 8th, 2011, I'm really quite surprised by the tenor of his letter, if in fact you followed applicable law. And is it that your position? Is that you were simply following the statutes as they are written today?
Well, Senator Newman, as Senator Lori pointed out, this is my first term as a chairman of a committee, and being a chairman of Finance Committee, being a part of this process, and this is the first opportunity that I've had to, in an interim, to look at federal grants. And as I said, I'm concerned about the way the statute is written. I'm concerned about a process that doesn't allow for the legislature more broadly to review what federal monies are being used for. And I think particularly today, when we're looking at the state of the federal budget and the amount of debt that we have and the amount of spending that's going on, and I would just point out, and it's maybe a little bit editorializing here, but I apologize for that, but when we're taking federal money, this is money that we are borrowing from China, I understand. I don't know if that's entirely true. But we're borrowing money to spend federal money. We don't have a large surplus of dollars sitting in Washington that need to be spent, and we're going to find a way to spend them. We are borrowing money, and I think it is entirely appropriate for this legislature to say, if we are going to put the next generation in debt, what we're going to spend that money on better be pretty important. It better be things that we are unable or unwilling, or maybe not unwilling isn't the right word, but unable or find impossible to do with our state dollars. In other words, to me, there should be a fairly high threshold of saying that the federal dollars, now that's just my opinion, but going back to the law, I thought that if that's my opinion, I might be the only one in the legislature who believes that. And so should I be, on the basis of that, saying, well, this shouldn't happen? I felt that we need to have a hearing. And because of the non-urgent nature of these grant proposals as they originally came to us, I did not think it would be controversial to say, let's just wait, have a hearing, and make a determination about what these dollars are for, how important they are, and whether it is an appropriate thing for the state of Minnesota to take. And I appreciate the comments. I don't want to belabor this. I just wanted to make sure people had some sense of why we're here, what we're doing, and if you have questions about that process. And I would like to move on to the grants themselves. You have a packet. You have a list. There are, I think, about 8 in total. And what I'd like to do is invite Commissioner Ellinger to come forward or anyone from his staff. And I'd like to have an opportunity for each of the grants to be taken up and have a brief presentation on the part of the commissioner or his staff about what these grants are for, and then would invite questions and comments from members of the committee, and then we'll proceed to the next one, and we'll do that and hopefully be done within the hour. Commissioner Ellinger, welcome, and if you and your staff would identify yourself for the record, I'd appreciate it.
Senator Hand, members of the committee, I'm Dr. Ed Ellinger, Commissioner of Health. And with your permission, I would like to take a few minutes at the beginning to sort of set the stage of how these grants are developed and our relationship with the federal government in grants, and then have Assistant Commissioner Craig Akam kind of talk through our vetting process for the grants, and then invite members of our staff to come and go through the specific 5 grants that are part of the docket today. And I want to give some background, particularly in this month, November of 2011, which is almost to the day 90 years from the time when the federal government started to interact with the states in providing federal dollars. In 1921, Warren G. Harding signed the Shepard-Towner Act, which was the first time that dollars were spent from the federal government to the states for maternal and child health issues in particular. And the reason this came about is because maternal mortality rates and infant mortality rates were quite high in the country, and they were not declining very rapidly. But there were some states that did show some success in reducing maternal mortality and infant mortality, and those efforts really needed to be expanded as far as the health of the country was. So the federal government said, we're going to provide dollars to the states to provide maternal and child health programs, to really start public health nursing programs, to start vital records programs, which really did serve the purpose, because shortly after that, maternal and infant mortality rates started to decline precipitously. And so that was the first time when the federal government was involved in public health kinds of things with grants to the states. These have continued on till the present. And these grants really have formed a partnership between the federal government and state and local governments to really address the health needs, not only of the states, but the health needs of the country, because of the interaction and the movement of populations and the fact that a lot of the issues are state and federal issues at the same time. And the states have also been a proving ground for some projects, and Minnesota has been one of those for many projects. The things that we've started here have then been duplicated throughout the country with support from the federal government. The grants that the federal government makes serve a variety of purposes. They're certainly for research and development about new ideas and new issues. They form demonstration projects to see if some ideas can be worked and in the kind of scale that they can be worked on. They help with capacity building, where some states do not have the resources to develop, like it had the vital records program, which is crucial to do all of public health, to have good birth and death records. States did not have the capacity to develop that capacity. They help to implement best practices when we know what really works. With some stimulus dollars from the federal government, these programs can really start and do good work on the state level. And then it helps to implement new initiatives. This was particularly important with preparedness. When after 9/11, when we realized that we were woefully underprepared to respond, federal dollars helped to spur initiatives to develop an emergency response program, a preparedness model that really has been crucial in this state and throughout the state. So with that partnership, Minnesota has been a partner with the federal government in that. But when the grants are made available, potential grants, we also have a process of looking through these grants to say, are these appropriate for the Minnesota Department of Health to apply for? Do they really fit the mission of the department? And our mission of our department is really improving the health of the population. It's not individual care, but it's really the health of the population. And our focus is on disease prevention and health promotion, not necessarily on treatment. And it also forms the basis of trying to get the right kind of information, the right kind of assessment, surveillance, and monitoring programs. So we look at, do these grants fit the mission of the department? And then do they fit our priorities? There are lots of things that might fit our mission, but they may not be our priorities. We make sure that they fit within the initiatives and the priorities of the department. Do they advance a significant public health addressing a significant public health problem? And do they have a chance of really improving that problem? And then do we have the capacity and the expertise to carry these out? We have a lot of expertise in our department, but there are some things that we just really don't have the expertise to go after the grants. We also look at, is there a requirement for matching or long-term commitment? And those are certainly the things that we look at to see if the value of that investment is really appropriate for the state of Minnesota, and then whether there's ongoing funding commitments that are there. Again, making the determination whether or not we think that investment is a good investment for the state. So those are the processes that we go through, and these grants are quite competitive. As resources have become tight, the grants are very competitive, and you'll hear as we talk about some of the grants that, you know, we've been one or two of the, all of the grants that are there, or excuse me, or less than 20% or 25% of the grants get funded. So these are competitive grants. So I'll now turn it over to Assistant Commissioner Akam to really talk through the vetting process that we do internally.
Thank you, Commissioner. And before we do that, I do want to ask you, as you know, when we first received these grants and the first conversation you and I had in my office about these grants, these were non-urgent in nature. Now they're before us as urgent. Can you tell us what has changed between October and now that makes these grants that were at that time non-urgent now urgent?
The urgency of the of our request really relates to the fact that these are competitive grants. That
Commissioner, were they competitive in
they
October?
They were competitive there, but our expectation was that they would be approved through the LAC, and that we would then have permission to spend the dollars on these grants.
So, Mr. Chair, if I may add to Commissioner.
Please introduce yourself before we go.
Thank
ahead.
You. I'm Craig Akam. I'm the Assistant Commissioner at the Department of Health. By way of background, to Senator Lori's earlier point, the law allows for two 20-day review periods, which are called non-urgent. But any grant, any federal grant that a state agency or our state agency is seeking approval from the LAC goes through that process if it aligns with that time period. And so earlier in October, we had applied for these grants but not been awarded the grants. And now that we have actually been awarded the grants, there are timetables that have deliverables and grant requirements to them. And as the commissioner said, these are also competitive grants. And they were then, and they are now, but now we have them. And our federal funders will look to give these to other states if we are not able to meet the requirements of their timetables.
So if I'm understanding you correctly, and I don't want to mischaracterize this, but when we talked about these grants in October or at the end of October, and they were non-urgent, even though the grants, the character of the grants has not changed, there was not, at least in my recollection of the conversation, there's nothing on your part that said these should be considered urgent. The law says that this means that the monies be allocated or allotted before the legislature reconvenes. Are all these grants going to be allotted in their entirety before the legislature convenes? Because that's what it says an urgency is under the law. Is that your testimony, that these grants will all be allotted before the legislature reconvenes?
Mr. Chair, members, when we met in your office after the end of the 20-day period, I think that we did say that we had been awarded these grants, which was different than when you received the original packet, that the grants were competitive, and that there was a risk of the grants going away if we were not able to spend them.
And I do recall you saying that, and I think that is a different question. The fact that you've received a grant that may or may not be available to the state if we delay and wait for the normal process contemplated under the law, that's one thing. That is not an urgency under the law. An urgency says that the money has to be allotted before the legislature convenes, that to not do so would be a problem. Is that, and I just want to clarify, is that what you're saying, is that today you're saying these grants have to be allotted before the legislature reconvenes, even though in October when we talked, that was not the case?
Mr. Chair, I think that was the case in October, and that's still the case today.
If that was the case in October, then why was that not made clear to me in our discussion?
Senator Hand, that was discussed in your office, where we did say these were competitive grants, and that if if we were not allowed to spend it, we really ran the risk of losing those dollars. Therefore, the programs would go away. So the urgency is the fact that we could lose some of these basic programs that really would benefit the state of Minnesota.
And that, in your opinion, is covered under this definition of urgency in the law?
Senator Hand, yes, that is our opinion.
That's not my opinion, but I will understand that we may have a difference of opinion on that. Commissioner, what I'd like to ask you to do is to, we've got, I believe...
Mr. Chairman?
Sir Newman.
May I ask the Commissioner a follow-up question to the issue of this urgency? You've indicated that there's a possibility of losing these funds because of timeline. Can you provide us with a document which would outline the timelines on the various grants that we may lose if they are not approved before the legislature reconvenes?
Senator and members of the committee, all of these grants were for the federal fiscal year starting October 1st. And if we are not able to spend these dollars, fairly quickly, we will have to go back to our federal partners to say that we're not able to spend it. And our risk is that they will say these are competitive. There are other states who would like to have these grants, and we will, rescind the grant. So we run the risk of losing these grants.
Mr. Chairman,
Sir Newman,
Commissioner, spending fairly quickly is not a very definitive term for me. I'm looking for the dates. You are indicating that if you don't receive the authority to receive and spend these grants prior to the legislature reconvening in January, you stand the chance of losing the grants. I want to know the date. There's got to be a federal regulation or a federal statute or a rule or something that you are relying on, and I'd like to know what that is.
Senator, members of the committee, there certainly is a work plan for each of these grants, which is an agreement that we have with the federal government in applying for these grants, and that work plan really starts October 1st. We can outline the work plan so that the dollars, some of the grants are for a year, 2 years, or ongoing, so that the expenditure of those dollars will be over a period of time.
Mr. Chairman.
Sir Newman.
One last question. I'm just going to try one more time, and then I'll leave it alone. Are you able to provide me with a copy of the rule or the regulation or the statute that you are relying on regarding this timeline that tells you this money has to be spent before the legislature reconvenes? Can you provide me with that document?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair and Senator Newman, there is language in the federal grant awards saying that if we cannot meet the deliverables of the grant, the federal government has the authority and the discretion to rescind those grants.
And that is language that you can provide to me. Is that correct?
Well, we can provide a copy of the federal grant award. and so, or the federal award of funds. And so the issue, Senator, is that we have timelines that have deliverables that we need to meet before the legislature reconvenes. And if we are not able to meet those, as the commissioner said, these were all competitive grants.
I understand all of that, what you're saying. And pardon me, Mr. Chairman, you keep saying that we have these timelines that we have to meet, but you are either reluctant or unable to provide me with what those timelines are. And that is a bit frustrating. And it seems to me to be a pretty simple question. What are the timelines that you are referring to? And give me a copy of them so that I can look at them. Are you able to do that?
Senator, Mr. Chair, Senator, we'd be happy to provide the committee with copies of the grant work plan.
Right. And just, I just want to point out and make clear here that it says in the law that an urgency requires that all or part of the money be allotted before the legislature reconvenes. And so when we reconvene in January, at the first hearing that you're attending, will you be prepared to testify to the fact that the dollars in these grants will be allotted by that time? That's what the urgency under this law requires. And I just want to make, you're saying that it meets the standard. I'm not sure if we understand clearly what, that we may differ on that, but that's what the law says. Urgency requires that all or part of the money be allotted. And I'm just going to ask you, when we reconvene in January, are you going to come and testify to this committee that those dollars have been allotted?
Mr. Chair, the term allotted is a technical term where MMB releases the funds from the federal grants to the state agencies to allow them to be spent. And so MMB would actually be the commissioner of MMB is the one who allots the funds. And then we are not able to have any expenditures from these grants until that process is taken. And we have... our urgency claim is that these dollars would need to begin to be spent before the session begins.
All right. We've got Senator Lurie and then Senator Benson.
To Senator Newman's question, too, I mean, I would refer people to the November 8th letter from MMB and the nature of the urgency for each. I mean, these are separate timelines for each of the eight grants that are currently held up. And so, I mean, there isn't one federal timeline that applies that's easy to just go through. There is a section for each of these grants beginning to describe the nature of the urgency on a grant-specific basis, and then also an explanation as to why the availability of federal funds could not have been anticipated and submitted to the last legislative session for review. I mean, these are all grants that, that came available after the session closed. I mean, we didn't even know that they were going to become available. So the agencies, as they testified, were, you know, reviewing federal grants that grant opportunities that became available, prioritizing the ones that fit within their mission, tailored to what we're trying to do as a state anyway, to stay ahead of the curve on health and on human service issues. And, you know, I think that many of these are like one-year grants. You know, I mean, we're 4 months into the year before session even starts. And, I mean, I think that it'd be a high bar to pass a bill and get it to the governor even, you know, right early in the session. I mean, we're talking about chewing up over half of the grant period before we release dollar one. I mean, I think that these are, you know, important issues, and I hope that we can look at each of these, and we can talk about the urgency, and it is described here, and I'm certain that the agency would be forthcoming if any one of these urgencies wasn't delineated well enough in this brief. I'm certain that we can get, you know, large copies of the RFPs and the signed contract that we had with the feds that delineates the timeline for each one and what the plans are. I mean, I think it's all there, and there's a good start for members to understand it in the November 8th MMB letter to the LAC, grant specific on each of the eight grants.
Senator Benson, did you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and commissioners. The largest grant is occurring over a five-year period. So could you please articulate for me the deliverable that is required of you, required of you, between October 1st and January 30th. And if you cannot articulate that, would you please make it available? Because your contention is the federal government is requiring you to produce deliverables. And if you don't, then the funds will be pulled. So what is the deliverable that is required?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Senator Benson, I'd be happy to describe that in detail. My intention was to do that as we walk through the individual grants. And if you'd like that to happen now, we...
Why don't we do this, members? There are, I believe, five grants in the Department of Health area. I would recommend, just to make sure that we have time to hear from the commissioner's staff, to just review the five grants succinctly, if possible. We'll hold off our questioning and then try to give members of the committee opportunity to raise questions on any of the five grants as they may occur. But if you would please proceed and walk us through the five grants that we're talking about that pertain to the Department of Health.
Well, Mr. Chair, to that end, our five grants actually fall in three of our divisions. And so I'd like to ask those division directors to come up and talk about their grants quickly. Three of the grants are in our Health Promotion and Chronic Disease Division. And so Patty Meyer, our Assistant Division Director, is here to talk about those three.
Ms. Meyer, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the tape.
Good morning, Mr. Senator, or Mr. Chair. I'm Patty Meyer. I'm the Assistant Director of the Health Promotion and Chronic Disease Division at the Minnesota Department of Health. And as Mr. Acomb said, three of the grants on your list are in my division. The first one I'd like to talk to you about is the one I believe it's identified on your list as the Minnesota HUD program to reduce the environmental triggers of asthma. The purpose of this grant is to improve the health outcomes for children with asthma by improving the management of their condition and reducing environmental triggers of asthma in the home. And by triggers, we mean things like pests, dust, air fresheners, tobacco smoke, things that can set off asthma attacks in children. A little bit of background about this grant. Children with uncontrolled asthma have frequent doctor and hospital visits, and they miss many days of school. Asthma can disrupt their sleep and interfere with their physical activity. Our MDH asthma unit developed a program called Reducing the Environmental Triggers of Asthma. We call it RETA for short. This grant application that we are talking about today is based on two previous successful RETA projects. The first was funded by the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, and the second by the Beverly Foundation. The RETA program, the way that that program works is that a public health nurse or a certified asthma educator does a home visit, assesses the home and the child's asthma status, and provides family-specific education on asthma management, which includes their medications, their asthma action plan, and their exposure to triggers. They connect the family to community resources and identify appropriate environmental interventions, such as air cleaners, mattress and pillowcase, dust encasements, and vacuum cleaners if that's what's necessary to make the home safe for the child. In the EPA project, which was very well evaluated, a year later, the average child had two fewer doctor office visits for asthma and one less hospital visit than the previous year. The number of school days missed declined from 7 days to less than 1 day. Also in the EPA project, the cost per child was less than $500, but the average saving in health care cost per child was almost $2,500, which saved $5 for every dollar that was spent. So we've been looking for funds to replicate that program and found an opportunity with the Federal Department of Housing and Urban Development. So the focus of this grant application is on children in public and subsidized multifamily housing. We worked with the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency to determine what parts of the state have the highest concentration of Section 8 properties, and then we contacted the community health boards in those areas to determine whether or not they were interested in participating in this application. We submitted an application that requested to work with seven community health boards. We were not fully funded, and so our application is now down to five community health boards. We'll be working with Anoka County, Dakota County, Ramsey County, the City of Minneapolis, and the cities of Bloomington, Edina, Ridgefield. Overall, these community health boards will be working with the families of about 200 children. This grant was extremely competitive. There were more than 30 applications for the grant, and only four were awarded. And of those four, only two were state agencies, ours being one of them. Any go on to the others. The second application I want to talk to you about is on your list, I believe, the enhancement of the Minnesota Cancer Surveillance System for early case capture of pediatric and young adult cancers. The purpose of this grant is to shorten the time that it takes for pathology laboratories to report childhood cancer cases to the Minnesota Cancer Surveillance System, which we call the MCSS. It currently takes about 6 months for reports to get through into our system. And the point of this grant is to reduce that lag time to about 4 weeks or less if possible. Some background on this activity. The MCSS is the only population-based cancer registry in Minnesota. It collects information on all cancers that occur in Minnesota residents except the most common form of skin cancer. The cancer data come from hospitals, clinics, and pathology labs. They send the data to us by automated electronic reporting, secure faxes, paper forms, or on-site abstracting by the MDH staff. And that's in order of how much it costs us to collect the data. Obviously, the cheapest is when it arrives every morning in the computer, and the most expensive is if we have to send staff on-site to actually go through the records ourselves. After a very careful review and approval process, MCSS data, usually in aggregate form, are used by cancer researchers to identify causes of cancer and evaluate cancer treatments. If the data are recent enough, and 6 months is not recent enough, they can also be used to identify potential participants in clinical trials. The way that our statute is set up, in order to contact a patient about participating in any kind of study, we need to go through their physician first. So that adds another week to the process before the patient can be contacted. So the grant that is before you was funded by CDC, and the focus is on pediatric or childhood cancers. About 250 children under the age of 20 are diagnosed with cancer in Minnesota every year, and that's about 1% of all of the cancer cases in the state. We have a number of strategies in this grant for speeding up the reporting time that will be funded by the grant. In the first year, what we plan to do is to upgrade our computer system to process the automated pathology reporting more efficiently and accurately. We plan to give grants to two large facilities to upgrade their data systems so that they can report to us electronically every day of their pathology reports. We have not yet decided which ones those will be. We're going to look for those with the largest volume, with the largest savings for MCSS in salary and travel costs, and the facility readiness to be automated. There are other facilities that are moving towards electronic reporting that will continue to do that with their own funds, and we will have a staff person on board to assist them as they get that system up and running. We also will be sending our own staff more frequently to the smaller clinics that don't submit their data electronically or in a timely manner. While the CDC grant is focused on pediatric cancers, the system improvements we will make with the funding will speed up the reporting of all cancers in Minnesota and make the MCSS more efficient and save overall time for over. We won't have to spend as much on overtime and on travel costs. This was a competitive grant. The CDC funded 7 of the 15 states that applied.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Bentz.
A simple question. You referred to 250 children are diagnosed per year, and the governor's letter refers to 5,000. Could you please clarify how those numbers are reconciled?
Ms. Meyer.
I'm sorry, Senator Benson, could you repeat the question?
Senator Benson.
Mr. Chair, it was stated in testimony that 250 children per year are diagnosed. Their pathology reports would flow through this system, and this appears to be a 2-year impact on the project, and 5,000 cancer-afflicted children are referred to in the governor's letter. Could you please tell me where the 5,000 number is derived relating to this grant?
Ms. Meyer, Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, Senator Benson, I think that I'm not sure exactly, and I don't think Ms. Meyer was involved in that, but I believe this number came from our staff, and it's a subset of the 22,000 that Ms. Meyer had referenced, and that it would be an estimate of the number of children that we could help connect to opportunities more quickly with this grant.
Okay, that was not Mr. Chair, that was not a clear answer at all. If 250 children are diagnosed per year, let's presume that the children who already have cancer have been connected, though delayed, and 6 months is a very long time. I can concede that that would be anxiety driving for families. However, 250 children per year are diagnosed, and yet we're told that 5,000 children will be impacted. Now, a significant number of children have already been contacted. Where does the 5,000 number come from?
Mr. Chair, Senator Benson, I'm not exactly sure. We could find that out, but I would imagine what that number reflects is the number of children in Minnesota currently afflicted with cancer.
Okay, and
Senator Benson.
Where Ms. Meyer was talking about 250 children are diagnosed
and
every year.
Mr. Chair, with all due respect, I hope you have contacted the families of most of those children already. This grant would be a going forward impact, not a looking back impact. Those children have already been contacted. The families have already been connected with optimal care that is provided for in this grant. This is a looking forward process. So again, is the 5,000 number inaccurate, a good guess, put together for political purposes? I'm going to need some clarification because this letter is quite harsh. And I would like to know where the 5,000 came from. Who in the staff estimated 5,000? What numbers did they use? Or is it just completely inaccurate? Now, I will concede 250 children a year having delayed contact is worrisome, and perhaps the anxiety of those families has an incredible value, but this 5,000 number has been all over the media, and I have heard nothing to support its validity. So if you'd like to use another argument, that would be fine, but this 5,000 number has no support here today.
Mr. Chair, Senator Benson, I'll find you the clarification.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, my understanding as I read about what this grant would be, that it would actually bring a benefit to all children with a cancer diagnosis, because it's more talking about not kids that are just diagnosed, but it's talking about new treatments becoming available and being able to quickly reach out to any child with an existing diagnosis of cancer, not just a new diagnosis. So, I mean, it's not like you get a diagnosis of cancer and somebody contacts you and you're all set now. I mean, this is a debilitating and very difficult disease for children and their families to deal with. And I think that this cancer surveillance system monitors new treatments and new clinical trials that are coming online and increases the speed with which any child with that horrible diagnosis is able to receive information, not just the 250 with a new diagnosis. It's more watching the new developments in cancer treatment and making sure that they make the connections with any child that could benefit from that new development in cancer treatment. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, that's how I read it and how I reconciled the 250 and the 5,000, but maybe I could.
Senator DeLury, members of the committee, that is true. It'll benefit all of the people with pediatric cancer, all of the children and their parents. But we will look into the number to see how that 5,000 number was determined. Is that, you know, the children and their parents, the families, and get that information.
Senator Hayden, did you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for allowing me to sit in on this hearing
to the
today.
Committee. I know that you haven't, I don't know, officially been appointed, or maybe you have, but we haven't received notice, but I'm glad you're here.
Well, and I appreciate you allowing me to sit in and ask a couple of questions. It's pretty important work. I was just going to kind of follow along the lines of Senator Lori. And not to repeat what he said about what I read about the grant, which is it's research and it's a surveillance system, and it doesn't necessarily mean, as we know, that people who have cancer, you know, you report the cancer and then somebody else, you know what the treatment is and they get back and the kid is fixed. It is kind of an ongoing process about how they got it, what the environmental factors were, what the situation was. So I guess the question, just to get to the 5,000 number, because I am a little concerned about some of the hyper-partisan rhetoric, and maybe that's just my welcome to the Senate, but to try to be the new guy and try to, you know, maybe take that down a little bit. Do you know how many pediatric, how many children have cancer in the state as we speak? Is that a fair question, or is that a question that we can answer today?
Mr. Chair, Senator, I don't have that information with me.
Okay, because I think that that also may be a number that I would like to see, because then maybe that jives with, since there isn't representatives, I mean, I guess the department is a representative of the executive branch, but we don't know if they weren't involved in writing this letter, if they're not in front of us. The question might be how many children have cancer, because this surveillance system has the ability to help all children who have cancer now in this state. Is that right? Excuse me, Mr. Chair. Is that right, Commissioners?
That is correct. It's Senator and members of the committee. This is a surveillance and monitoring so that it allows people who have a diagnosis of cancer to be contacted for various treatments that may come up, various research protocols that they might become part of, so all of the people in the registry are able to participate in that.
So, Mr. Chair, and Commissioner, so we could have 5,000 children that have cancer in this state. Is that right?
Commissioner?
Senator, I mean, we could.
Yeah, we'll look at there's a percentage of children who experience cancer. You know, we have 70,000 births a year. So my guess is that, you know, over children in their lifetime that we can get 5,000, but we'll get the exact numbers for you for that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Senator Hoffman, did you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I understand the urgency, or not the urgency, but the importance of this kind of work. I've got a couple questions. Are these children in this registry voluntarily, or do they just, because they live in the state of Minnesota, do they just automatically get added to a cancer registry through their private physicians?
Ms. Meyer?
Mr. Chair, Senator Hoffman, the cancer surveillance system under Minnesota statute, all providers are required to report cases of cancer to the Minnesota Department of Health.
Mr. Chair, thank you. So do the patients or their parents have an opportunity to opt into that registry, or are they just because of the condition of their disease, they are just automatically opted in?
Mr. Chair, Senator, it is a mandatory reporting on the part of the provider. It is not opt-in or opt-out by the parent.
Okay. I'm going to redirect that maybe a little bit, so maybe it's a clear question. Where does patient privacy come in into that particular statute? How is patient privacy protected? I don't necessarily think that it is the function of state government to intrude in medical care between a doctor and the patient, whether it's mandatory or not. And I understand you have to operate under statute. I'm trying to understand the statute. And then I do have a follow-up on that.
Ms. Meyer?
Mr. Chair, Senator, the MCS statute classifies this data as private, so it is covered by everything in the Minnesota Government Data Practices Act about protection of private data. And operationally, the Minnesota Department of Health takes that very seriously, that these records are under two or three or four locks and keys. It is protected.
And Mr. Chair, Senator Hoffman, I'm sorry. You know, the goal of the Minnesota Cancer Surveillance System is to look at population trends. This isn't an individual intervention. And so this isn't meant to get between a patient and their doctor. This is meant to provide information that will benefit everyone who may be suffering from cancer or may potentially be suffering from cancer, and providing information that will help lead to research, cures, treatments, and other options for the benefit of everyone as a whole.
And Senator Hoffman, and then Senator.
Well, thank you for that. So now I'm a little confused, because a few minutes ago you said this was a program to get pediatric cancer patients hooked up into treatment or clinical trials. And my question is, and I'm coming from, my last job was as an oncology nurse, In my experience, it has been that the physicians always understand and know what clinical trials are available for each particular patient, for each particular circumstance. And so I'm a little unclear if this program is to look at the global population of trends or if this money would be used to connect an individual patient. Earlier, you said it was to connect an individual patient to maybe a clinical trial through the state government. And I'm wondering, and I don't know if that's kind of a two-fold question there, but what is it? Is it to establish the trends in Minnesota to look at hotspots, or is it to get the individual hooked up with clinical trials, which in my experience, the physicians that I have worked with in my career have always known the research that's available, clinical trials that are available for the patient. So which is it, or is it both? I'm not clear right now after that last answer.
Mr. Chair, Senator Hoffman. This is about collecting the information to evaluate the effectiveness of the research, of the treatments, to provide feedback back to the physicians and the families in order to understand what is the best course of action for them. Everyone is in an awful individual situation. This is a resource and a tool to help them.
Senator Lori?
To this point, one of the things that I caught, I wasn't aware of this until you said, I think you said that you're not able to even contact the patient directly under Minnesota law. You have to go, you're actually in communication with the doctor, not the patient, trying to make sure that the doctor is up to speed on new developments and the best evidence and things. Is that the case? And maybe you could elaborate on that a little bit. I think it gets to this point a little bit as well.
Mr. Chair, Senator Lori, that is correct. We do communicate with the physician before we contact the patient or the family.
Right. Well, but you do contact the family at the end.
Mr. Chair, Senator Lori, most of this work is done by researchers. It's not done by MDH staff. And so the protocol that they develop for contacting people is developed and approved by an institutional review board that is set up to ensure that patient privacy is protected and the patients are dealt with appropriately.
Thank you, Ms. Meyer. And I know I wanted to kind of give you an opportunity to go through all of them, and I wanted to continue. But it seems like we've stopped on this one, and there's a good reason for that. And I don't know if you've seen the letter. It was addressed to the legislature and to me in particular. It talks about this grant, and there's been things reported in the news, which has, I think, been the provocation of some of the questions that you're getting, and maybe Commissioner Ellinger. But if I read from the governor's letter, he says, and he directs this at me personally, not the legislature, not the Senate, not the committee, but me. And I want to ask Commissioner if this is accurate. He says that my imposition of my personal ideology is unwarranted, and I assume he means because I followed the process in law. And he said that I'm imposing this and preventing people with urgent needs from having their needs met, and that's unconscionable. And then he said that he, meaning me, that I will severely harm 5,000 Minnesota children with cancer and their families, that I will harm severely 5,000 children with cancer because I followed the law and asked for a review of this grant. Now, I want to ask you, Commissioner, is that description in the governor's letter of what we've done and the description of what your grant will do, is that accurate?
Senator Hanman, Commissioner. Members of the committee, the activities that we provide through the state health department really work at a population level. They really try to do the surveillance, the monitoring, and improving all of the care that goes on. If we do not improve the care for children with pediatric cancer, if we do not improve the immunization rates, if we do not improve the various health promotion and protection activities that affect all children, and raise it to the highest level possible, yes, children will be hurt by our lack of attention to those kinds of issues.
So let me ask you directly. Am I personally severely harming 5,000 children because I said we should have a review of this grant? Am I doing that, Commissioner?
Senator Hahn, if this program is not implemented, we will not be doing the best we
That's
can for the children
I asked
of
you,
the state of Minnesota.
Commissioner, that This doesn't say, and nothing in the things that we've contemplated in law would say that this grant would not be accepted. It's a question of when it would be accepted. And we're talking right now about what it does, and as I'm hearing this discussion, my sense is that this is not about making sure people get screened, because they are going to be screened, regardless of whether this grant is. It's about improving an existing system of data gathering for assessment, which is maybe perfectly fine and legitimate. I'm asking you about the characterization of my actions and the description of them by the governor, whether they are accurate. And I'm assuming that you had discussions with the governor about this before he wrote the letter. And the reason I'm asking that is because when you and I talked about this, this didn't come up in our conversation. You never told me that if I did not let that grant go through, that 5,000 children would be severely harmed by that, by following this process. And I just want to make sure that I understand whether I was being told accurately by you at that time that these grants and the questioning of them would not cause harm, which is what you did tell me, or if the governor's right and they will cause harm. And I'm asking you directly, is this characterization of our action accurate by the governor?
Senator Hand, when we met in your office and we went through these grants, we said that across the board that the lack of funding of these grants, the lack of implementation of these grants would affect individuals in this state.
I'm not asking whether they would affect individuals. We can stipulate that anything we do in state government will affect individuals. Right. The governor is saying that my actions will, not maybe, not possibly, will, they will severely harm 5,000 children. I'm just asking you to validate that statement, yes or no.
Senator Hand, in our conversation, we did start going through the various grants. And we went through two grants, one related to primary care providers and one related to immunizations, where we gave you the details. At that point, you said we would not talk about any more grants, so we were not able to go in your office, go through each of these grants because of a meeting that you had to go to. So we were only able to go through two of the grants. Those are the two that you agreed that could move forward. We did not discuss any of these other ones in detail in your office.
So when I asked you the question whether anybody would be harmed by the acceptance of these grants and you told me no, is that accurate or not?
Senator Hand, I don't believe that I said that no one would be harmed by the by not having these grants.
In fact, Mr. Chair, I was also in attendance at the meeting. I seem to recall that question by you, and Dr. Ellinger said that there would be repercussions to that, and we began to talk about the grants in more detail. And as Dr. Ellinger said, we only got through two of them and weren't able to discuss this grant.
Well, Commissioner, with all respect, that is not my recollection of the meeting, because I asked you that as a general question, and you gave me two grants that we subsequently agreed to release because you felt they met that criteria, and we didn't debate that with you. We said fine. But you did not mention this grant at all in the course of that discussion, and I don't believe that I was in a hurry to get out of that meeting. And I have my staff here that we can debate recollections, but I'm asking you today if the characterization of the governor's in the letter, if that is accurate. Because if that is so, the question I would have is, number one, why wouldn't this grant be declared urgent at the beginning of this process in October? Number two, why wasn't anything in our last budget addressing this, since it will severely harm children if we didn't do it? Why wasn't that part of your budget proposal? It's only a few hundred thousand dollars. I know that's a lot of money, but in the course of our budget, that's not a lot. If we're saying that we're going to harm 5,000 children, why wouldn't we have put the money for this process in our budget that we passed earlier this year? There is something wrong here, Commissioner, and I'm trying to understand whether I'm getting an accurate description from you or whether the governor's description of this is inaccurate. One of them has to be true. And I'm just asking which one is true.
Yeah, well, Senator Hand, there were three parts to the question statement. One is, we did try to go through the grants in your office, but we were not allowed to go beyond the two that we talked about. And we did, and I did state that these, not funding these grants, would have a negative impact on the health of Minnesotans. And we'll go through what, and we're going through the kind of impact it'll have.
So you're saying that this would severely harm children, is that correct? You agree with that assessment?
Senator Hand, it will have a negative impact on the health
it's
of children.
It's not what I'm asking, Commissioner. I'm asking you to validate the language the governor has used in his letter characterizing our action on this grant. He says it will, without question, without that it will severely harm. And I'm just saying, is that true?
Senator Hahn, just like urgency has some different kinds of definitions, significantly harm, I believe that the lack of funding of this grant will harm Minnesotans. Significantly is a judgment of magnitude.
And if that is the case, then I think that it was, if you believe that why you wouldn't have told me that in my office, I think, since the other grants that we talked about, as I recall the conversation, you said there was a potential that they may result in something not happening that could result in something, but you did not describe any of these grants as causing severe harm to anyone if they weren't adopted immediately. You did not say that.
Senator Hahn, I don't believe I had the opportunity to do that in your office.
We met in my office for an hour. Commissioner, you had plenty of opportunity. And I want to continue to allow Ms. Meyer to review the rest of these grants. And if we have further questions on this or others, we'll come back to that. But Ms. Meyer, please continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The third grant I want to talk to you about is on your list is the Prevention and Public Health Fund Coordinated Chronic Disease and Health Promotion Program. This grant is a planning grant, so it's a little bit harder to describe what it's going to do. But the purpose of it is to make our chronic disease prevention and management programs more efficient and coordinated and to better align our resources with chronic disease needs in Minnesota. Department of Health receives federal grants that address many chronic diseases and their risk factors. That includes cancer, arthritis, oral health, injury and violence, heart disease and stroke, diabetes, asthma, occupational health and safety, nutrition, physical activity, obesity, and tobacco use. And many of these federal grants are facing cuts at the federal level. And we don't have any state funding for most of these diseases and risk factors. So these grants that we get from the federal government are categorical. And by that we mean that those funds can only be spent on activities that are related to that specific disease or risk factor. We have many excellent programs in these areas. In fact, some of them are national models of excellence of how to do these programs. But there are overlapping activities across the programs, as well as programs that don't have expertise in some necessary functions. So this grant is funded by CDC, and they're asking all states to go through a process of looking at how they work on chronic diseases and their risk factors at the state health department. It's not about direct services at the local level or for patients. It's how does the health department do its work. So we plan to use a facilitated process. The first step we will do is identify our core competencies for chronic disease prevention and management. What are the things we do as a health department as opposed to other parts of the public health community? Then we will identify the opportunities for integration of strategies that address multiple conditions and risk factors. And finally, we'll be developing and implementing a plan to align our staffing partners' resources and structures to improve efficiency and effectiveness. We'll be looking at how we can streamline such cross-cutting functions as communications, disparities, evaluation, fiscal and resource management, partnerships, policy and environmental change, surveillance and epidemiology, and training and technical assistance. And CDC is also expecting us to develop a statewide chronic disease prevention and health promotion plan.
Continue, Ms. Meyer.
I believe that's, Mr. Chair, that concludes the three from Ms. Meyer's division. We have two more if we have time.
Continue.
I'd like to ask Pat Adams, our director of the Office of Statewide Health Improvement Initiatives, to come up and talk about the Community Transformation Grant.
Senator Hahn and members, members of the committee. Again, I'm Pat Adams from the Office of Statewide Health Improvement at the Minnesota Department of Health. I'm here to speak to the Community Transformation Grant, which is a grant, a highly competitive grant that was issued through the Centers for Disease Prevention and Control. And the purpose for this grant is that it aims to reduce chronic diseases such as heart disease, diabetes, cancer, and strokes, by promoting conditions in which people can make healthier choices. And communities can design environments in which people can live in a more healthy way. And the ultimate goal is to really address populations that have greater health disparities, and those include people who are in poverty, people who have mental illness, as well as people who have a higher rates of obesity and tobacco use. This grant really does target chronic diseases because that is the leading cause of death and disability in Minnesota as well as in the U.S. And it's a key driver of our health care costs. In fact, it accounts for 75% of the $2 trillion that the United States spends on health care in the U.S. So we need to impact the trajectory of these costs by moving more upstream to address the underlying, the root causes of our increasing incidence of chronic disease rates in our state, and the consequences of those chronic diseases. And so the targeted behaviors, risk behaviors for this grant include obesity and tobacco use and exposure. We were awarded $3.6 million for this grant for five years, so a total of $18 million. Our original grant was higher than that. Also, you need to know that Hennepin County Public Health and Human Services Department also received one of these awards in the amount of $1.1 million per year for 5 years. As I mentioned, this was a highly competitive process, and one out of four applicants were selected for funding. And so there were about 260 applicants nationally, and about 60 of those were awarded the funds. There are some requirements, major requirements for this grant that I would like to outline. First, we must use evidence-based system change approaches to address healthy eating and active living and tobacco-free communities, and also to integrate this with the clinical and other prevention services. Secondly, we are to reduce hypertension and blood cholesterol levels by 5% over the next 5 years. We are to address and target rural populations, and we are to reduce health disparities in the populations that I had mentioned earlier. Also, these funds cannot be used for research or to provide direct health services. So we intend to implement this grant by building upon the local and the regional work that has been happening through the Statewide Health Improvement Program, also called SHIP. And so local grants will be awarded to local public health and tribal agencies to target communities that have the greatest need, based on poverty, smoking and obesity rates, mental health, chronic disease burden, race and ethnicity. And funds will be awarded to develop local and regional systems and partnerships to improve the access to healthy foods and physical activity opportunities, to support strategies to reduce tobacco use and exposure, and to improve clinical prevention and care coordination systems. By federal guidance, we have to distribute at least 50% of these funds out to local and regional partners. And of that, at least 37% has to go to rural communities in Minnesota. So 37% of the $3.6 million per year. Because of the commonalities between SHIP and the Community Transformation Grant, we intend to coordinate these funding sources toward common strategies. Right now, we have issued a request for proposals for the new SHIP grants, and we are in the process of evaluating those applications, and we expect that the grantees will be selected by December 1st, or around the 1st of December. And that is for funding that will go through June of 2013. We anticipate awarding community transformation grant funding to a select number of those grantees who are from communities in rural Minnesota that are experiencing greater health disparities, again, based on poverty, mental illness, race and ethnicity, and chronic disease burden. This community transformation grant will really provide us with the opportunity to really go more in depth in our use of evidence-based policy systems and environmental change approaches to improve the health of populations in our state, particularly those who are experiencing chronic diseases. In terms of why this will benefit all Minnesotans, even though we're going to be targeting certain areas of the state. Chronic disease really impacts worker productivity as well as the economic vitality of our state. And one of the major strategies that we employ both with SHIP and we will be using with Community Transformation Grant is to work with employers and work sites to really look at how can conditions within employer work sites promote health. And that is being done right now in a number of parts of our state. Rice County, for example, has a collaborative involving 21 businesses in their community. And those businesses have really committed to looking at how can they promote healthier eating within their food choices that they're offering in their work sites, looking at their smoke-free, tobacco-free campus policies, and other kinds of initiatives to really support workers to be healthier. And when workers are healthier, then that translates to their families as well. And so, in summary, this is the purpose of the Community Transformation Grant. Again, it's a five-year grant. There are deliverables. We have already had to submit a revised budget, and that was due last week. By January, the end of January, we have to submit a revised implementation plan because we have less funding than we had requested. And by the end of February, we must submit a revised evaluation plan. As was mentioned earlier, we also have a very detailed work plan that started immediately upon notice of the grant award. And so we are not implementing any of those activities at this point. Awaiting approval to move ahead with this grant.
Ms. Adams, thank you. You described, and I'd like to know a little more in detail, the activities this money is used for. You described something in Rice County where businesses are, so am I to understand that this money then is being paid to businesses to do something? And if so, what is it that they're being paid to do?
Actually, the money initially flows through local public health and tribal health agencies. And so then they work in collaboration with a community leadership team in their community that then decides how they want to spend those monies, but they have to follow the evidence-based menu of strategies that we provide to them. And so one of them involves workplaces. And so they may, in working with Rice County employees or employers, for example, they provided some mini grants to local employers that might incent them to, for example, offer a smoking cessation program in their work site. And so it's like seed money to get initiatives going that then can be sustainable over time. So that's one example.
In the course of the budget discussions we had earlier this year and talking about SHIP grants, and you've identified these as very similar in nature to SHIP grants, and there were a couple of stories or even kind of appeals that were published in our local community paper inviting people to apply for monies funded under the SHIP grant process that would, as I understood it, pay people to grow gardens in their backyard, to grow vegetable gardens. Is that an accurate example of some of the things that this money would fund?
To grow gardens in people's backyards?
Yes.
The strategies were focused on community-level strategies. And so,
and as I understood, this was the city of Bloomington who was saying, we've got this money, and what we're going to do is encourage gardens to be grown in our community by local individuals, and so we're going to offer... they invited people through this in this story to apply the city of Bloomington to receive money so they could go out and plant a garden, I assume. I didn't apply for one, so I don't know exactly what. But I'm just trying to get at, is this the kind of thing that this money was going to be used to do?
One of the key strategies for a community transformation grant as well as a SHIP grant is to address areas where some people have poorer access to healthy foods. And so Bloomington, Minneapolis, and other areas identified populations in their community where it was more difficult for them to access healthy fresh vegetables. And so in those areas, that was one of the strategies that they could use to encourage communities, neighborhoods, to identify parcels of property where those vegetables could be grown for the benefit of that neighborhood, and in some cases, the requirement was that 10% of those vegetables needed to be contributed to food shelves for people who obviously needed that source of food and couldn't afford fresh vegetables. That's one very small part of our overall strategy for improving healthy eating and physical activity, but it was one strategy. We have not included that in SHIP, the next iteration of SHIP funding.
Or in this funding, Mr. Chair.
Right. It's not in community transformation grant.
So in some ways, it seems to me that this money is duplicative of the SHIP grants. And perhaps if we have a budget constraint next session, if we accept this money, then it might give us an opportunity to reduce some of the money the SHIP grant. Is that
well,
Mr. Chair, this is complementary to SHIP, not replacement. And also, as you recall, in the final hours of the budget negotiation, Mr. Chair, the SHIP funding request was reduced considerably. And so this would be money that we are leveraging from the federal government because of the work that we've done in the state with our SHIP program and other programs that has made us competitive for this funding to find a way to continue to meet the needs of Minnesotans, even in the budget constraints that our state is facing today.
And I appreciate that. I'm just wanting to make it clear that this is money that we are borrowing that our next generations will be paying back at interest to provide these activities. And I just want to make sure that these are high-priority activities that have an urgent nature to them. But you have another grant that you want to talk about, Ms. Adams?
Senator Hand, just in response to these are evidence-based practices, particularly in this community transformation grant, that really have the potential to reduce health care costs. Probably more than anything else that we can do to reduce health care costs is by moving upstream on some of these chronic diseases. So this is an investment for the future generations that actually will save them dollars. If you look at the costs of health care, if we just provide access to medical care, even the preventive services in the medical care piece, we will not reduce costs and save lives dramatically. It's only if we reduce chronic illnesses, chronic diseases, will we have any chance of reducing costs and improving overall population health. So this is an investment. We're not taking money away from future generations. Actually, we're investing in the future.
Senator, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Hahn. Also, I thought I heard you mention that there was some clear deliverables in this, too, with a reduction of hypertension or something. I mean, there was some clear deliverable benchmarks that could actually be demonstrated, and we are able to put a dollar amount on how much reduction. It's hard to pinpoint exactly, but if we don't turn the tide on some of these population-based health statistics, we're going to be faced with these increasing percentages of our GDP going to health care for a very long time, and we need to intervene early on. So, I mean, I think that fact about there being very clear, deliverable, demonstrable results from these investments is a key point to stress as well. And I heard them. I didn't write them down, but they are there, right?
Mr. Chair, Senator Laurie, they are. The grant requires us to reduce hypertension and blood cholesterol by 5% over the 5-year grant period.
Senator Newman, and then Senator Hayden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a quick comment to this last testimony about demonstrable evidence to show that this is money spent. What I've been seeing in the news and hearing is the trend of Americans towards obesity, diabetes, hypertension, heart control. So I just want the committee to know that I'm not readily buying into the testimony that a grant of this type is evidence-based to help us along the way towards curing obesity and diabetes the diseases, because these programs have been in place for a number of years already, and it seems to me that we're going in just the opposite direction. So I'm not necessarily going to buy into the argument that this is not going to
Senator Hayden and then Senator Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, you know, I think it's, first of all, I think evidence-based says that the evidence says that if you do this, if you eat vegetables, if you you know, eat healthier, that you will lose weight, that you, that heart disease will be better under control and diabetes under control. So the evidence of that, I think, is clear. The evidence of if people have the opportunity to have those vegetables, to have that opportunity, is, I think, what the SHIP program in particular, and it looks like what this community transformation grant is trying to get at. I know that in the community that I live in, that we have places that are called fresh food deserts. In other words, there's miles upon miles of area, very densely populated areas, where poor people who don't have transportation don't have the ability to get to a grocery store that has fresh food and vegetables. And so the idea that we're helping people, we're either helping grocery stores to have access to that, or we're helping people get to where the food is, I think is important. And the evidence does show that if people eat fresher foods, if people do leave a much more healthier lifestyle, then the trends that the senator is talking about that is going the wrong way will start to come back the other way. And thus, if people start to take care of themselves better, then they have less likelihood for chronic disease, which means then we should have lower health care costs. And I think that we didn't get here eating things that we shouldn't be eating that are readily available and cheap over a short period of time. And I think we should know that if we're going to return the trend the other way, that it's going to take some time and some effort to get there. So I think that often when we talk about these issues, you know, if we believe in that or not, I think that what might be helpful is to be able to talk to the people who have these issues, go to those districts that don't have the availability of fresh food or the means in which to get there. And I think we'll find that some of these grants, maybe not all of them, maybe there is a one along the way in which maybe we shouldn't grant, but I think that if we wanted to put a community garden in a vacant lot in South Minneapolis and that the food that was made available there, the community had access to, I think that's a good thing. So I think this is a good grant. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Right. Senator Betts.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just an observation, because this is leveraging the SHIP grants that are already in existence, that belies some of the urgency. This could be a shot in the arm to the SHIP grants after legislation was passed to authorize it in February. And since the SHIP grants are already in place, I think some of the efficiencies that we're looking for could be leveraged through that program without spending this money outside of legislative oversight. The second point that I would like to make is we're talking about dynamic scoring here. And I think it is worthy to note that sometimes what the government does cannot be measured simply by a single-sided view of government spending. Sometimes there is a dynamic impact in the economy, and I think that's worthy of discussion in these halls outside the Health and Human Services Committee, say, in the Tax Committee.
Thank you. Senator Lorraine and Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Senator Hannan. I guess, you know, yesterday I went to the healthcare reform task force, too, and listened in. And one of the slides just jumped out at me. I hadn't looked at it yet, but America's health rankings, that all states go to and look at for where they measure up, had some really interesting information. We still rank first in outcomes, but we rank seventh in determinants as linked to health disparities. And we dropped in 2 years from third overall in health rankings to sixth. And on the slide that shows where Minnesota is, there's two challenges listed. And one of the challenges is that we have low per capita public health funding. And grants like this go directly to trying to counteract the forces in Minnesota that are making us less competitive. And I think that we're doing a significant disservice to the people of Minnesota in hampering and slowing down the efforts to do better in health rankings. The other one, this is a preview of one of the Department of Human Service grants. The other challenges listed in America's health rankings is high prevalence of binge drinking, which goes directly to the SAMHSA grant that is also being held up at the Department of Human Services. These are the two challenges listed by our, you know, the number one health rankings of among states. And so this is what's at stake here. And those are the two challenges. And this action slows down our public policy response to these significant threats to the health of our people. And that's I think that's kind of at the core of,
And Senator Lori, just to be clear, so in your view, the legislature should not look at grants before they're spent by the administration? Is that your point?
I did say earlier, I'm happy to be here discussing them, but some of the discussion, I just think this is a relevant point. These are these grants have already been slowed down, and the potential is to slow them down more or create an environment where we try to bring some of these investments to a screeching halt, and I just think that's the wrong direction. And so I think that's I'm glad to be having these conversations. I think this is a very important point in the conversations. That's the nature of my comments.
Senator Hoffman, did you have a question?
I do. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to make sure I understood a point that you said earlier. Because of the grants, part of the requirement is that we lower hypertension and high cholesterol by 5%, and I didn't catch the time frame.
Yeah, during the five-year grant period, Senator Hoffman.
Mr. Chair, could I ask the testifiers, do you know when the food pyramid was first brought in by the federal government, when the FDA first brought that out to the public, how many years ago that was? I think I was probably before I was in high school even.
Mr. Chair, Senator Hoffman, I personally don't know the answer to that. I know the food pyramid's been modified in recent
years. Quite a bit, yeah. And in my experience, just reading the statistics that are out there and in my profession and even in some recent news articles, people are more obese than they've ever been, and we're spending billions of dollars on educating the public on the dangers of overeating and smoking and drinking. But yet we're seeing more and more people with more and more chronic disease, and we're aging, so that's going to be kind of a natural progression of getting older. Your body doesn't work as well. And we're also seeing more people than ever in the country and in the state on food stamps. And so I'm with Senator Newman. I don't necessarily buy that we aren't, the government isn't already spending enough money for public education, and now this just looks to me to be yet growing yet more government, and I'm not sure the direct benefit. I haven't seen the evidence that all this spending we've done in a federal government that's broke, in a state government that we're struggling with the budget, and yet we want to increase more spending for procedures that I don't see have done any good for the public. Obesity is, more people are obese than ever, especially people in poverty areas that are on food stamps now. So I don't know how more spending is going to help that population. It hasn't so far.
Mr. Chair, Senator Hoffman.
Commissioner.
The obesity problem in the United States has been growing over decades. And it's only in recent years that we've begun to address that proactively and try to reverse that trend. And actually, the SHIP program came about as an initiative of Governor Pawlenty to try to do exactly that. And as Governor Ellinger, you've been promoted. Commissioner Ellinger,
I'll pass on that promotion.
Stated earlier, the single largest rising cost of the federal government and, frankly, of our state is direct health care costs. And if we're ever going to get a handle on that, what we really need is to reduce health care spending by having a healthier population that needs to require the services of the health care community less and less. And these are direct efforts to try to do that. And the spending, as Senator Lori pointed out, in Minnesota, according to national rankings, we're in the bottom five states for per capita public health spending. Yet, we're in the top 10 for outcomes. And I think that's a testament to the hard work where we have been very frugal and very effective with the limited funding we've had as a state to try to affect the outcomes of the population of Minnesota and to produce a healthier citizenry.
Senator Hoffman, Senator Hand, certainly obesity is increasing, and a lot of obesity relates to choices that people make, but they make it in the context of their environment. And as the senator had said earlier, when you don't have access to fresh fruits and vegetables, it's hard to make those choices. When you don't have a community where you can walk or bike, it's really difficult to make those choices. So what the Community Transformation Grant is doing and what has been shown throughout the country is if you can make the environment making health healthy choices, the easy choices. People do make them because people don't want to be overweight. They don't want to smoke. They don't want to have unhealthy lifestyles. But we have an environment that really supports unhealthy lifestyle choices. So SHIP and Community Transformation Grants are trying to change those environments so the healthy choice is the easy choice.
Could we ask our next testifier to talk about the final grant?
And Mr. Chair, we have one last grant to talk about. With me is Linda Bremer, the Director of Environmental Health Division.
And please introduce yourself.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Linda Bremer. I'm the Director of Environmental Health at the Minnesota Department of Health. I'm here to talk to you about the last grant. It's called Managing Unregulated Drinking Water Systems in Minnesota. That is the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention title, not ours. That's the official grant name. What this is about private wells. The well construction code is housed at the Minnesota Department of Health because it's a public health prevention program. If wells are properly located and constructed, we can avoid risk of contamination from surface contaminants flowing in and for drilling down into the best aquifer available. So what this grant is a $74,000 grant that was competitive. Only seven were awarded within the United States, and I don't know how many people applied. It is the follow-up to a previous grant we had with the Centers for Disease Control, and we wrote a final report to them in 2010 on that first grant. So it's sort of an optional follow-up. We did a pilot program, and now we're given 24 months to do this next grant. It's collecting no new data. You may know when a private well is drilled, the well driller has to ensure that the drinking water is safe, and the only samples that are required to be taken are nitrates, bacteria, and arsenic on a new well. The health department, there are no state requirements that we ever go back and resample the well or the owner resample the well. We certainly advise people to do that. What has happened in a few counties is that they have gone out and done special studies, and they now have data that we would like to look at. So this is sort of a data transfer project to work. We've got the expectation of local partners in Scott, Dakota, and Anoka counties. They're ready with their databases. And we're going to look at what happens to the quality of the water over the life of that well. Just like all the health programs, we're looking at aging of wells. And it's an aging population. And so that in a nutshell, is the proposal.
Thank you. Ms. Bremer. I do want to give the Department of Human Services an opportunity to present information on the additional grants that we have under consideration. And Commissioner and staff members, I appreciate your being here today. Thank you for your presentation and your information. We appreciate it very much.
Thank you for the opportunity.
I'd like to invite at this time whoever is here from the Department of Human Services. As I understand it, there are three grants and I'd like to give you an opportunity, and we'll try to, as best we can, withhold any questions we may have until you've had an opportunity to at least present that information to us. But please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Mr. Chair, Chuck Johnson, Chief Financial Officer for DHS. We're happy to have the opportunity here to share the work that's involved in the three grants in question for DHS, furthering our work of helping keeping seniors in their home and further integration of our treatment and identification of mental and chemical health services. We plan to spend our time covering the substance of the grants. I'm available if you have questions regarding the process, but other than that, I will turn it over to Ms. Wood, unless you have questions for me.
All right, thank you. Please. Yeah,
I'm Jean Wood. I'm with the Department of Human Services, and I would like to go over two grants. The first one is on dementia care. It is a three-year grant, $700,000 over those 3 years. Its purpose is to increase the length of time that family members provide informal caregiving to people with Alzheimer's disease and other dementias. And we are doing that through both skills building and through providing direct services to families that are caring for someone with Alzheimer's disease. We have been, over the last few years, developing the what is called the New York University Caregiver Intervention, and we provided to the committee a copy of that particular study of the of that evidence-based work so that you can see that as implemented, it can delay people with dementia from going into nursing homes for 557 days. We are seeking to expand this in three regions of the state through our area agencies on aging, and we are going to change the model so that we are incorporating other caregivers and be able to apply it to other diseases. We are also going to be working on the earlier identification of people with dementia so that we can provide home and community-based supports to them earlier and help the caregiver, again, sustain their caregiving role for a longer period of time.
Please proceed.
The second grant is called Integrated Services, and it is multiple services all in one grant. And again, it is a three-year grant. It is $2,300,000 over those 2 years, and we have multiple strategies that we are using. And the impact is to be able to delay spend down to medical assistance and delay the movement into nursing homes for some populations with using a variety of strategies. The first one is self-directed services with the U.S. Veterans Administration. Currently, we are running a pilot with the Sioux Falls Veterans Administration, by which we are using the Aging Network, the Area Agency on Aging for Southwest Minnesota, to provide a package of services to veterans who otherwise would be in a nursing home so that they can be able to stay in their own home. And we are seeking to expand that statewide. The next strategies are some direct services that we offer, and we offer these in conjunction with the Minnesota Department of Health, and they are our falls prevention. We are the second highest in the nation of fatal falls in the community, and so we are seeking to turn that curve by expanding falls prevention services that are available for people in the community. And we are also seeking to expand our chronic disease self-management, again, to people in the community who are who have multiple chronic diseases to be able to learn to self-manage those stay healthier longer. The next strategy is a fairly large one, and it concerns care transitions between nursing home, hospital, and home. And again, we have a population of both elderly and disabled that go from medical event to medical event, and they go through the medical system. And what we have found is that the earlier that we can intervene with both services and with information, we can prevent some of that cycle and stop people from kind of going over the cliff and winding up in very expensive residential services. And that ends my presentation.
Thank you. Mr. Johnson, do you want to continue with the last grant presentation?
Yes, thank you, Senator, members of the committee. My name is Reggie Wagner. I'm the Deputy Assistant Commissioner for Chemical and Mental Health Services. Very briefly, you do have a handout that talks a little bit about our grant. I think the important thing to understand about this grant is that it's a one-year, basically a strategic planning grant given to the state as part of our ongoing five-year grant that we're currently in the middle of to address a statewide prevention network within the state of Minnesota. The one-year planning grant is to help further and enhance our data collection at the local level, to look at streamlining our funding and redirecting it with an emphasis on adding in mental health and primary care organizations so that we are really looking at our alcohol and substance abuse prevention activities in a much more integrated framework so that what happens at the local level in regards to not only just alcohol, but looking at indicators of, you know, is there depression? Is there a mental health component that we need to look at? So we're trying to really, in line with SAMHSA, the federal funder, look at enhancing our prevention activities into a more data-driven, looking not only at what type of fatalities are involving alcohol and drugs. Those are things that we're already looking at, but now we're trying to harness more data related to mental health, working and partnering more with primary care settings to look at screening for alcohol or drug use and to make appropriate referrals in that regard. So it's a one-year grant. The planning was to have begun on October 1. We do have a deliverable under the grant that is due on December 1st, and it would ultimately result in a five-year strategic plan that is due at the end of the 12-month period, due August 31st.
Thank you. Are there questions from committee members?
Mr. Chairman, not a question or a comment on this particular grant, but all these, I think, listening to the testimony on them, they strike me as nothing in here that's particularly glitzy or glamorous, but it's kind of behind-the-scenes work that the agencies are supposed to be doing. And I understand your questions about why these are now urgent when a month ago they weren't, but I think the bottom line, and I understand miscommunication between you and the governor's office and so on, but I think bottom line is they were going through the process, the routine process of here's what we do when funding becomes available between legislative sessions, and it became urgent because the routine one didn't go through routinely the way it routinely does. And so we either lose the money, which you may feel is okay, but I mean, to me, I mean, when the, I don't know whether one of the first ones, the asthma program, I mean, she said it was, and I haven't done great research in this, but I do believe with people who have asthma, you prevent the attack, the kid doesn't end up in the hospital, you save a lot of money. And she said 5-to-1 payback. And again, a lot of these other things, they're not going to be glitzy things. These aren't going to be the headlines in the paper that the state's doing this, but it's solid research work that's being done at the state agencies. And again, I understand your why is this so urgent, but again, the nature of it is, I don't think earlier I was listening to the discussion of Senator Newman about what's the deadline? Can you give us what deadline? And these are kind of ongoing things that start this day, and you have to do these. You can't do a research project overnight by putting 10 more people on it. You start doing it right away. So I understand I understand your concerns, but I do think that, I mean, I think my understanding is from both from what you said and from what I've been, my understanding of the process is that these grants are going to go ahead through the urgent process. The money does happen now, but I understand you're not understanding why it's urgent, but it wouldn't be urgent if it went through the order way, and you have the right to object. It hasn't happened a lot in the past, but you know, if they want to continue with non-glitzy but routine work that ought to be happening to deal with obesity, to deal with tobacco use, to deal with integrating, in this case, the chemical dependency problems with mental health and primary care. I think it's solid work that's being done, and I realize there's a lot of political rhetoric going on this issue, but the bottom line is this is what I think we want our state agencies to be doing, and I'm glad the money's going to go ahead. I don't mind listening to all this presentation, but I think it's appropriate that it go ahead now.
Well, and Senator Marty, thank you for your comments. As always, you're thoughtful, and I appreciate your perspective. And I agree with you. I don't think that much of what we're talking about here is, as you call it, glitzy or glamorous, and that's not, in my opinion, the reason why we should evaluate these grants. My point all along has been, given the process we have in law, to give the legislature an opportunity to know and ask questions and to evaluate these grants before they are accepted. It wasn't my understanding, and was, as I said, a surprise to me that the governor made such a big deal about this. They were not urgent. They seem to be dealing with things that are, as you say, fairly routine, maybe part of the ongoing mission. I do think that there are legitimate questions that I certainly have, others may share them, about how anxiously we want to engage in accepting federal money and spending it and making sure that's reaching a certain level of importance before we do it. I counted up the number of new FTEs that will be brought into the administration of the Department of Health, Department of Human Services as a result of just these eight grants. It's 11 people. 11 new FTEs will be brought in according to the documentation we received. So to me, the question isn't whether or not these things are doing stuff that may be helpful or may have some benefit, and we may have a sincere debate and difference of opinion about some of those things. That has never been the issue in my mind. The issue is really about what is the process that we're going to use and whether or not the legislature ought to have the opportunity to evaluate these things before the money is spent. And that's been my intent all along. And as I said, it was a surprise to me that all of a sudden this got to be escalated in the mind of the governor to some kind of bad behavior on my part, I guess, in particular, when all I thought I was trying to do was give the legislature and the public an opportunity to ask questions or understand. As a result, I can just tell you, in the last 24 hours, I got an email from a person who's from the Chippewa County Family Services, who's raising questions about the federal grants and the Board on Aging, and I don't know the substance of this, and obviously we don't have time, and this is one of the things that's unfortunate, that perhaps if we had the opportunity in the course of the normal legislative hearing that we would have people who might want to raise questions in the public about some of the grants, and I don't know the substance of what this person is raising other than she's making some assertion that we ought to be looking at these grants. So my point is not that things that are happening here are somehow bad things. That's never been my point at all. It's just that how are we going to process these and how are we going to proceed with them and whether or not they should have scrutiny. And, of course, secondarily to that, I have concerns about the kind of information that we're receiving from the commissioner under staff about the nature of these grants and the subsequent description of them by the governor, and there seems to be a huge disconnect in those two things, and that is very troubling to me. So I appreciate your comments, Senator Marty, and I appreciate the presentation. I want to give other members of the committee any opportunity to ask questions about the grants that we've heard. Is there any other questions?
Senator Marty. You know, I don't, maybe, and this is up to you whether you share or not, I mean, but this committee doesn't have any power right now to vote or anything. You're the only member of the LAC that has thus far objected. Now we've had our hearing and heard about each of these grants, and I'm just curious. I think the 10 days expires on Friday of the urgency, and it is incumbent upon you then as to whether you make a negative recommendation or a recommendation for further review, and I'm just wondering if you are willing to share your plans over the next few days, whether we're going to drag this out farther or whether we can be done with this and let the agencies get on with the business.
And Senator Lurie, what I'd like to do, and as I said as we convene the hearing, I would like to invite all the members of this committee to offer any advice that you wish, either orally or in writing, with my office in the next day or two, and I will look at the advice of this committee and members of this committee to pass on any recommendations to the full LAC with respect to the disposition of the grants. I have been told that in past, when grants have been put through the LAC process, when they have received negative recommendations, and I understand there have been some, and some of it has centered around the question about whether they're urgent or not, that in past practice, that when those questions have been raised, that the administrations have always deferred to that recommendation and allowed the legislative process to proceed. Now, I don't know if that's going to happen in this case, given the characterization the governor has made of these things, but we'll see. But I would just like to invite members of this committee to provide for me in any way that you wish. You can send me a memo, you can come and visit with me, or send me a letter, or however you want to do it, but any advice you would have on any of these grants in particular, or all of them, and we will certainly use that as I make recommendations to the LAC in total. So, Senator Lurie, did you have?
That's all.
Are there other questions for the department? Seeing none, I want to thank you, Mr. Johnson, and members of staff for coming here this morning and helping us to understand these grants more fully. Appreciate it very much. And members of the committee, I want to thank you for taking time out of your day to make the trip here. With that, this meeting is adjourned.